Welcome to Everybody Climbs. I'm your host, Emily Chen Newton. This is a collaborative podcast presented across Plugtone audio platforms about para and adaptive climbers. From community building to competition training, we get into it on this show. This is a collaboration with Sends and Suffers podcast and Mario Stanley. So if this is the first time that you're hearing my voice on this platform and you're like, "What? Who is this lady?" Fear not. This is still Sends and Suffers. Mario is still your regular host. I'm just going to be popping in for an episode about once a month to bring you more adaptive content. In today's episode, we have a conversation with two undeniable pillars in the adaptive climbing community, Ronnie Dixon and Maureen, better known as Mo, Beck. Ronnie is based out of Chattanooga and leads the group Prosthetic and Orthotic Associates of Tennessee, specializing in custom prosthetics. He also helped to start several adaptive climbing initiatives here in the States and was the first American above-the-knee amputee to send a V10 and climb 513C. That's Ronnie. And Mo has served as an athlete ambassador or representative for climbing organizations, including the American Alpine Club, USA Climbing, and Paradox Sports. She was also named National Geographic's Adventure of the Year in 2019. And with nearly two dozen podiums under her competition belt, Mo has somehow never strayed from the community building and the joy that she found and then helped to foster within the community since about the early 2000s. And today we're talking specifically about the Adaptive Climbers Festival. Now, we're airing this in 2024, but we recorded this conversation back in about middle of 2023 as they were gearing up for the fourth year of this festival. It's annual, so don't worry, it's going to be taking over the Red River Gorge again this fall. The festival was started by a whole rowdy crew of climbers and allies. Ronnie and Mo are just two of the current organizers. Here's our conversation. Before we get into talking about the festival, because this is one of the first episodes in the new Paraclimbing podcast series, I want to just start with talking about what is paraclimbing or adaptive climbing, and how do you find yourself personally fitting into it?
Ronnie, you go first.
All right, I can handle that. Paraclimbing is generally kind of like a catch-all phrase that describes somebody who's climbing with, some form of a physical disability. And that takes a lot of different forms. I've personally found myself in this world from my above-the-knee amputation. So in 2005, I had my left leg amputated above the knee. And, I would say that two-year period after my amputation was average, high school graduate, going to college, finding, my way in the world. But the one thing that I was missing that I had previous was like a sense of passion, like something that got me really excited. So it really wasn't until I found rock climbing that I really felt that like deep passion, that sense of purpose, that place where I belonged, all that kind of fell back into place for me. So I was kind of adrift for a couple of years. I guess that just needed some time to come to fruition. So in 2007, found climbing back, when paraclimbing was at its infancy, was able to play a really, really big role in being a part of that movement and helping grow that movement. It did such incredible things for me, and kind of in working through my disability that I just knew that I had a passion and wanting to share that with other people. So it was a really cool time to be a part of all that.
Yeah, so I always thought of myself as kind of a climber first before I was a paraclimber. And that's just because I was born with my disability. I was born without my left hand. And, I'm old enough that I found rock climbing before I found the paraclimbing community because there was like no internet when I started rock climbing. And it was interesting to me because it was a huge shift for me because I loved climbing. I was a climber. I've been climbing for probably 5 or 6 years by the time I did my first paraclimbing event and climbed with other people sort of like me. And that changed climbing for me. That's when I started working and climbing with other paraclimbers. That's when I kind of went from, rock climbing is just a hobby that I'll do on the weekends here and there to rock climbing is my lifestyle because of these people that I've met along the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, as I'm sitting here thinking about this, I actually did not plan it this way, but it's interesting because the two of you together are pretty emblematic of the community in terms of, I don't know if you could ever actually say a percentage, but it seems like almost 50-50 of people who were climbers and then had an accident and kept climbing, or people who found climbing later in life because of a disability.
Yeah, I don't know about 50-50. I guess I never thought about the actual split. And it's certainly, I feel like there's two different worlds as well. There's like, so we have the competition climbing world, and that to me, and I could be totally wrong, so I can't wait to hear if Ronnie thinks similarly. I feel like we, most of our comp climbers found climbing either with their disability, like being born with it, or found it after their disability. We don't have a ton of people who were core climbers and then had some kind of accident or something happen. In the more bigger community where there's also outdoor climbing and we kind of hang out and it's not as crazy and serious as the comp world, I think that might be closer to that 50-50. We do tend to see more people who are climbing before and then after whatever circumstance brought them our way.
Yeah, I think that would generally be true. I think I've kind of seen that correlation as well.
I'm glad that you brought that up. And I want to talk about that a little bit more later, the difference between the competitive side and the hangout side, which obviously is why we're here to talk about the festival. So tell me about the festival. What is it all about? Like, big picture first, then we can talk about some of the details that folks could expect if they were going to attend. But big picture, what's the goal? What's the purpose it serves?
Yeah, I feel like we can't talk about the big picture without talking about sort of the origins of it.
Oh, go there. Yes.
Yeah. And so as many things do in the climbing world, it kind of started over a couple beers. We mostly only saw each other at very specific events, which tended to be competitions. And after this one bouldering competition in Salt Lake, we all decided to extend our trip and go climbing outside together. And while we were doing that, over said beers, sorry, that's my lovely three-legged dog going psycho. One second.
This seems about average day in the Beck household.
So it was over said beers, but I think it was like Ronnie and Andrew and some other people who were like, you know what? This was so much fun, like just climbing together. Like, what if we built something that didn't depend or wasn't based around this competition? Like, what if we just hung out together and went climbing outside without this like stress of competition? And that's kind of how it started.
Yeah. So, kind of talking about getting, involved in paraclimbing at its infancy, I started in 2007 and there really weren't a lot of opportunities to get involved, with adaptive climbing. So when I went to the gym for the first time, knowing absolutely nothing, I went with a couple of my college roommates, both able-bodied. We went to a gym that probably hadn't seen a climber with a disability before, and we kind of just figured it out as we went. Then, through, bigger networking and more climbing gyms popping up around the country, we started to have gyms that were interested in putting together clinics and adaptive programming. And that was all happening around the same time that we started getting some, I guess you could say, some clout with USA Climbing and, starting adaptive climbing competitions. So a lot of these climbing events were really focused inside, in a very serious way, towards actual competition climbing. So yeah, the whole idea was we have this really amazing community and not everybody wants to participate or be involved in climbing this way. So how can we create an event that literally is for everybody in this community to kind of come together and really just enjoy the time with each other and use that as an opportunity for growth, because when we all spend time together, we have so much energy, so many awesome ideas that come to the table. I always found myself leaving these events or these times spent with other adaptive climbers with just so much motivation to keep growing our community and keep being a part of our community. So, how could we provide this opportunity for everybody else to be a part of?
I think it's really appropriate for this to be one of the first episodes of this series, because in a lot of ways, the Adaptive Climbing Festival, or ACF, was my first like major introduction to the adaptive climbing community personally and journalistically. But personally, it was massive to be around a group of people where there's just this, even though every disability is so different, even if it is similar in name or type, everybody experiences it differently, right? But there's just this very special sense being around people that there's just some shared element that is otherwise not necessarily there.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what gets me going in the morning to work on this festival is to try to create a space that like Ronnie and I didn't have when we were kind of growing up in this new world. And fortunately, we're still here to enjoy it. So the harder we work to create that space, the more fun we get to have. I always tell people I just do this work because I need more friends.
So how has the festival changed and evolved then?
Yeah, it went from really casual, really fun, core group of people. And then it just started blowing up because we started realizing that actually it's not that difficult these days to be someone with a disability and have your first climbing experience. Like there's programs and gyms all over the country. You can even try outside climbing at many different programs. But something that was missing was this way to become an advanced climber, an independent climber, to not have to wait to go to a program designed for people with disabilities. And so we kind of decided to add more programming to the festival versus just hangout time, to have clinics. And clinics, if you're a disabled person in an abled space, can be really intimidating. When I was signing up for Learn to Lead clinics, I was like, oh my gosh, is the instructor going to like single me out for having one hand? Or is this something I could even do? So we're teaching, we're covering the same material as say like a Kragging Classic or something like that. But that sort of emotional barrier of you being the only one who's different is gone. And so we're creating a space where people can just focus on what they're there to learn and not kind of doubt or worry that their disability will make it harder for them.
And that, yeah, I agree with Mo. I mean, the whole thing kind of started really kind of like family reunion style. You know, when we first started the paraclimbing, you know, I remember when we would bring six people to an event, call it successful, you know, because we were all really cash strapped, maybe sleep like six in a hotel room or something like that, just from real humble like beginnings. And, you know, now this World Championships that's coming up, you know, has 200 athletes signed up, and our national championships this last year had 120. So to go from our very first event that we did where we had six to that, you know, we've really grown a lot in the last decade. And the same thing with the festival. You know, the first festival was Mo and I badgering as many people as we could get to come out to come meet us in Alabama to go touch some rocks and set up some top ropes and boulder around and just have a good time. Our first festival was right in the mid 30s in terms of participation. And here, as of today, which is the day that we're about to close registration tomorrow, I think I saw 110, 111 mm-hmm. on the spreadsheet when I was just kind of floating through it. So, you know, just the amount that we've grown, you know, in this time has been pretty incredible. And it really far surpassed you know, what originally was like a family reunion or everybody knew each other, to where I go to these festivals as the organizer and I don't even know half of the people there.
Yeah. So take us back through the years past. How has the festival developed? You mentioned it started in Alabama, right? Or Arkansas. Take me through the history.
Go ahead, Ronnie.
No. I think you got it, Mo, and then I'll tag in.
So I can't take credit for your one. I wasn't a part of planning it then. I was like going crazy career-wise. And I think I took a red eye from Denver to Atlanta and drove through the night and arrived at 3 a.m. to Horse Pens in Alabama and had no idea what it was in for. But even at 3 a.m., there was still a campfire raging and a mostly empty bottle of whiskey being passed around. And I was like, all right, this is going to be that kind of festival. I'm in. I'm stoked. And it was just so fun. It was kind of like, because it was so organic and I would say family-based, there was like no rules and like not a ton of programming. That was neat because a lot of disability adaptive programming, whether it's for skiing or climbing or just other sports, it's so heavily managed. And I just thought it was so cool that this ACF space was just like, we're climbers, go climbing. We're not going to police what you're doing. We're not going to like control what you're doing hour by hour. Like you're grownups, have at it, have fun. And that was when I was just like, okay, this should stick around. This is a vibe that we definitely need in this world. And then the next year we moved to Horseshoe Canyon Ranch. It was more accessible. It had some really great sleeping areas, you know, had more cabins, and it had more rope climbing. Our community definitely leans on needing some ropes to have the most people have successful days. And that almost doubled year over year the first year. And then COVID happened. We ended up taking 2 years off. Didn't really know what to expect last year when we made our comeback. And we did not expect that it would double again. And that then this
more year, than doubled last year. Yeah, doubled, I mean, yeah. We went from like 40 in Arkansas to almost 100, I think, is where we ended up. So that was pretty wild.
And we should mention that was the Red River Gorge last year.
Yeah. And Arkansas was still a little tricky to get around. And, you know, we could sense this event was growing. And so we moved it to the Red River Gorge last year. And which I think is going to become our new home because we have so many great resources in the Red. Local search and rescue help us with ATVs to get climbers up to the crags. Local restaurants are donating some of their services to feed everybody. Our base camp, La Galinda's Hideaway, gives us a really amazing deal on renting their space so everybody can stay together. And the climbing in the Red's amazing. There's steep overhanging stuff that's great for folks who can't use their legs. There's some techie slab for people who do. It's just like such a great, beautiful spot and beautiful time of year. And so I think that's our home for a bit now. Yeah.
Yeah. Not to mention the Muir Valley, you know, really coming to bat for us with closing down a couple of their most popular crags completely for the event. I mean, it's just huge to, you know, have that much support of their board.
Yeah. And I think the local climbing community, like when they closed down those cracks for us, I was like, oh God, I'm like anticipating a post on Mountain Project or the Facebook groups being like, oh man, can you believe they closed down Brews Brothers on a Saturday? But instead everything was just like, hey, how can we help next year? Can we come hang out at the party? Like, we're so stoked you're here. And it's just been everything we could ask for and more.
Yeah. And as the Red being my home crag and being here in Kentucky, I just love the idea that the Red River Gorge could be this adaptive climbing hub. I mean, even the way that La Galinda, they adapted a bunch of their cabins last year, right?
Yeah, they modified all of their shower houses to be accessible, built a ton of ramps throughout their property for many, many cabins. And it wasn't cheap for them to do. And they never once kind of said, well, is one enough? They were just like, walk us around, show us what we need to do, and we'll do it.
That's so cool.
One of the many unique features of this festival is we actually feed everybody for the entire 4-day festival, which is a huge task. Not any other festival of this size that I can think of does that.
And I can attest, the food, you don't just feed everyone. The food is good, like homemade blueberry syrups for pancakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was too busy running around to enjoy much of it last year, it turns out. But it's really good food. My husband, who's not a climber, he actually hates rock climbing, but his favorite thing in the world.
What?
His favorite thing in the world.
I did not know this about you.
Yeah. No, it's a true story. He hates it. But this is his favorite weekend of the year because he loves getting up at 5 a.m. to cook for everybody.
I love that. Tell us about some of the other details. The clinics, what do you got?
Bigger and better every year. One of the things that kind of got us going on clinics is we talked to some folks, and a lot of like, we have this blind climber friend. He's like, I really want to learn how to lead climb, but every time I do a trip with XYZ group, they say I'm not allowed to. Insurance doesn't allow it. And we're just like, well, why don't you come learn here?
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of creating spaces where we believe that people with disabilities should be allowed to take risks just like able-bodied people. And we're going to help manage those risks, but we're also going to facilitate taking those risks, I think, right? Because we want to create independent, confident climbers. And so that kind of started last year with an intro to lead class where it's like, you know what, if you're comfortable, we're comfortable. Let's do this. And then we also have affinity clinics, not really clinics. It's more just like hangout time with people like you. So last year we had Lower Limbo, which is a lower limb clinic that Ronnie helped lead. And then we also had a blind climber clinic. And then this year we're pretty much adding affinity clinics for every group that we have. So we have the Armageddon Clinic, which is for upper limb different folks.
Nice.
The current name, working name for our SCI clinic is the Brokeback Mountaineers. And in that clinic, they're going to go over like personal hygiene in the woods when you're climbing. How do you manage a catheter setup? Because a lot of the folks there have spinal cord injuries. So lots of stuff like that, right down to your classic, like how to rappel, how to project, mindfulness, sport anchors. We even have an arts and crafts clinic for Sunday morning if you partied a little too hard Saturday night in class.
That definitely has happened every year. And at almost every adaptive event, that's an issue for sure.
Yeah, I think we're adding hangover yoga for Sunday morning. So
so that's just like an hour of Shavasana, right?
I think so. Child's pose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you mentioned the, in particular, the learning to lead clinic and just creating the space where you're going to facilitate, but people are allowed to take the risks that they feel comfortable with, it reminds me of when we were speaking earlier about so many of the events for people with disabilities tend to feel overmanaged, and how special it is that this becomes something that you're not just taking somebody out for a one-time experience. This is, you're becoming a climber.
Yeah, that's one of our takeaways, or like one of our mantras we live by, is we're not taking people with disabilities climbing. We're teaching people with disabilities how to be climbers. And we try to live that mantra by as many clinics as we possibly can, which this year should be all of them that are taught by people with disabilities.
Then thankfully, through some of our friends in the Red River Gorge, which is arguably the best sport climbing in the country, we were able to create some connections with the Friends of Muir Valley and come up with, our biggest and baddest festival yet. And this will be the first one that we're repeating because we really feel like we have the formula and the recipe dialed in just about right. So this year is all about us taking the same formula that we implemented last year and just making it bigger and better. You know, we had a comment just along the lines that, some of the folks with disabilities were helping out other folks with disabilities. Like I think a blind person was helping piggyback somebody. And rather than seeing that as a negative thing, like I actually think that's one of the positive things about our festival is we're not setting any limitations on what it can be. You know, just like some of the other adaptive programming can be over-engineered here, like we're actually, we're helping each other. We're not depending on other people for our success. So I think that that's one of the really awesome moments that came out of ACF, along with I've been to the adaptive community. I mean, I hate to keep bringing this up, can party really hard. Like, I mean, literally with the best of them. And we had a legendary toga party on our final evening of the last festival the effects were lasted for many, many weeks. I might still be hungover from that, but that's probably just a me problem.
It's not fair to say there's no competition at ACF because at least at the toga party, there was definitely push-ups. There were definitely pull-up competitions. I mean, their competition comes out, but maybe only once the togas also come out.
Yeah, what was cool is, so basically, for me, ACF is just like a normal climbing festival because people with disabilities should have the opportunity to be normal because we are normal. We're people. And one of the things that normal climbing festivals have that I wasn't seeing at other like adaptive specific stuff was campfires with beer. Like it's fun to hang out, have a beer, have a non-alcoholic beer. Like everybody does their own thing. And I think that's how we really grow the community is remembering that everybody here is a person first and wants to hang out. And it was just a good time. I feel like the party, the Saturday night party is really just like a metaphor for the bigger thing that we're trying to accomplish. It's more than just, who can hold a one arm pull up while chugging their beer contest. But
Yeah, no. The party's a metaphor.
I promise it's deeper.
And then did it actually happen? That's the question. Or is this just all a figment of our imagination?
That's a great question. There's no photos to document it. So we have thought about, what the future holds, especially with regards like to the Red River Gorge. And we're getting so big that it's hard to think of another place in the country that where, 200 by the end, by the time everybody has their plus ones and all the volunteers, we're going to have 200 people this year. Where else can we go that's so accessible, that has such great camping? So we might be looking at the Red as our longer term home. And then another thing that's important to me is we provide these opportunities for clinics, but then we also provide chances to just go climbing. And that can be really intimidating if you're a newer climber. And so we have a spot called Open Climb, where it's super accessible. The ATV can get you there, but there's just ropes hung for you and belayers ready to belay. That's a great way to meet people. And then we have what we call our backcountry clinics. And it's not so much a clinic as just a creating a space for climbers to grow as climbers, a little less accessible to you. Like they're going to be to other places in the gorge where you might want to have some independent mobility in order to get back there. But this is effectively just cragging with your friends. And if you're not a confident leader, you're not confident going out along, there's going to be someone in this crew who's able to like show you the way. But again, it's just all about the climbing.
And it's building the community, like you say. And another thing about those type of clinics or activities, whatever you want to call them at the festival, it also strikes me as something that is it's really acknowledging that there's a lot of people that you may not see their disability, or it may not necessarily be mobility based, like in the most straightforward sense. And that was something that I felt going to the festival. And I guess since this is like one of the first couple episodes we'll be doing, I should probably say about myself that I have a connective tissue disorder or a collagen disorder. So it affects my joints and affects a lot about my life, but I am able to walk up and down a trail relatively unencumbered. And so that was really special to just be part of this community where I didn't actually have to like tell anybody that. I mean, you do because it comes up around a campfire with beers, but you don't have to explain that.
Yeah. And that's another thing that's nice set against the atmosphere of climbing competitions. Who can compete has gotten more narrow over the years. That's gotten more serious. And so, you know, certain people with physical disabilities aren't allowed to compete. Mm. And ACF is kind of a nice antidote to that because we just said, you know what? We're not going to police disabilities. We're not going to ask for med forms. If you identify as someone with a physical disability and you want to come rock climbing, welcome to the family. Come on out. Like, we don't care. You're a member of the family. Mm.
When you look around the adaptive scene, what do you think is so special about this festival? And maybe you can even expand that to not even just the paraclimbing and adaptive scene, but when you look around the climbing community in general, what do you think this festival and other festivals like it, what need are they filling? What gap are they filling?
I think it's Ronnie's turn to go first.
No, it is my turn to go first. And I'm completely just kind of digesting all of that. You know, so much of what we can do these days, and it's just changed a lot from when we started. Like, there wasn't any Facebook when I started climbing. There wasn't any way for me to know if there were any other people with disabilities doing it. I mean, you could Google and find some stuff that had been done one time. You know, like Mark Wellman did LCAP. Eric Weinmayer was the first blind person to go up Mount Everest, I believe. Hugh Hare did a lot of really incredible first descents in the Northeast and the Gunks, climbing on, you know, double below the knee prosthetics. So the internet helped because then you could connect with people more readily. You know, you could have conversations with people like, hey, what are you doing with your setup? Like, hey, how is all this doing for you? How do you do it? Oh, that's really cool. That's really inspiring, you know, to know that you can do that, because now I believe that I can do that. But there is no substitute for actually getting people together in a room, people together in a around a campfire, and having those conversations that way. I feel so incredibly blessed and lucky to have searched after a lot of that when I was in, you know, my younger climbing self. But it shouldn't be that difficult to have an opportunity to get together with your peers and to let that change your mindset on what's possible. Because this is so much more than sport. It's, you know, so much more than, oh, let's climb the next grade, or let's, you know, figure out how to be better on the rock. Like, this is the kind of stuff that makes all the other things that you come up against in your life seem smaller and seem attainable. A lot of people with disabilities face challenges that most people take for granted. You know, someone with you know, an arm amputation, you know, physically using a fork and a knife at the same time, somebody who's in a wheelchair, just even though in the United States we have a lot of really great ADA accessibility, it has so much further that it can go. But how am I going to negotiate this curb? How am I going to get into this building? Will there be a bathroom that I can use? You know, all those little things. So all that adds up. It's cumulative after you live that for X amount of period of your life. You know, taking it even a step further, societally, it's hard because I know lots of people with disabilities that want to go back to work, but they're afraid of losing their disability benefits because they need them to physically survive and to have the things that they need. So we have all these paradigms that are conflicting and all of these walls that are up in front of our community. And, you know, I just feel like events like these make all of that seem less because it gives us tools. It gives us motivation to fight as hard as we need to against those things and to go to bat when it's our time to show up and feel empowered and advocate for ourselves.
And like it metaphorically so, or just because you have the sense of community and camaraderie, but also very much literally. Like I remember being at the festival and hearing conversations about insurance, you know, and disability and like how much are you allowed to work and kind of figuring that system out. Like some of this stuff is feeling the spirit of, you know, the community and the team, but then there's also just like very practical knowledge sharing that's happening too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, like last summer when I was pitching and fundraising for ACF, I was emphasizing, I'm just like, one of the things that makes us special is we're just like another climbing festival, like for disabled people, yes, but it's going to feel normal. It's not going to be different. Like, it's just going to be like, I want to show all of my family that's climbers with disabilities what it feels like to go to Kraken Classic, what it feels like to go to a Rocktoberfest or an Ice Fest. You know, it's going to create that fun space. And I was totally lying to myself because at the end of the weekend, I was like, holy crap, this was nothing like another climbing festival. And it's kind of hard to put your finger on. It's just, it's that much more meaningful. And I've done a whole lot of climbing festivals in my career. I've done a lot of events for people with disabilities in the climbing world in my career. But something about ACF just hits different.
Yeah, it is hard to put your finger on other than being able, I find myself like reaching for these really like ethereal words, you know, there's nothing, there's just this sense, there's this feeling, like I don't have a real tactile word to apply to it.
If you find it, let me know, because I'm also just kind of groping through language.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, groping through language. Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of language, though, I did want to bring this up because you were mentioning some of the names of the clinics. And I do feel it's important to talk about this very special sense of humor that exists. And how, you know, it can be, and it really, it shows up at ACF a lot, much more than you would see at some of like the sanctioned competitions. So can you talk about that a little bit? Like it could be misconstrued as self-deprecating, but it's not. Why not? Talk about that a little.
I mean, it kind of is. I think it's a community of people who have found themselves and that our mode for survival is generally dark, irreverent humor. And I think that just helps set the tone of what our expectations are for the weekend. It kind of just gets the awkward part out of the way. And also, I think, you know, again, just like how beer is a metaphor, I think using that irreverent dark humor is a way to be like, you know, this isn't necessarily going to be a soft experience. Like you're expected to like ask for help if you need it, but don't be shocked if you like trip on the trail and bust your knee or slip on the rock and cut your elbow open. Like we're kind of trying to introduce the raw, gritty attitude throughout the weekend. And sometimes our choice of language helps set that stage.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just another one of the things that feels different from the competitions.
Yeah, actually, I used to do an event that was for disabled climbers and it had the word GIMPs in the title. And it was amazing. And that's actually, it's actually the event that got me out climbing with disabled people. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, that's funny. Like it's not bubble wrapped. Like people are just, they're owning it. Right. And then a couple of years after it started, they're like, the organizing group was like, oh, we can't call it that anymore. Cause our sponsors might not like it. And I was just like, but that's our language. Like, can you imagine, if like this, like white owned company told Brown Girls Climb, they couldn't call themselves Brown Girls Climb. Cause that might be offensive to somebody. And I was just like, honestly, I love that we're owning our own language. And if someone doesn't want to donate money because of it, I don't think we want their money because I don't think they understand what we're about.
You know, it's kind of just the group around, but nobody will dish it out harder than you know, kind of we do against each other. And it's just all in good fun. And, you know, just making it not a big thing. It's like the more that you bubble wrap it and try to manicure it, you know, it just makes it more serious. And then just kind of by adding a little bit of the humor to it, it just takes the edge off and just makes everybody more comfortable in their own skin, you know, because we're actually talking about it.
Yeah, there's definitely times where we use language and then I'll have to look at a volunteer and be like, that's our word, not your word.
Well, yeah, I mean, just think if you were at a USA Climbing event, like, they're not going to have the lower limbo category because of where the terminology is coming from and who's handing it down or who's using it. I mean, and not at all to shit on the competition scene, because actually, Ronnie, as you were talking earlier about watching how things have evolved, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like this ACF exists in part, and this part of the community exists in part because of how the competition scene has grown the overall community, right? I mean, there's some like synergistic role there.
I think they're hand in hand. I think when we're at ACF, we're recruiting people to come compete at nationals. And then at our competitions, we're recruiting people to come hang out at ACF.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the truth is we just love seeing each other, and we fans and champions for our community, and we want as much of it as we can get. Being around our community and being around the type of people that come to our events makes me, you know, feel complete. It makes me a better person by knowing them, getting to spend time around them, by just being a part of our whole community. So I search that out as much now as I did ever. It just so happens that our group is 12 times larger than it ever has been. And we're just so lucky and thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. I want to wrap up today with just asking both of you to tell us a little bit about what you got on the horizon other than the festival in October.
It's kind of a crazy fall with the river trip coming up. This is the year that we're having the first ever adaptive category at Horseshoe Hell. So Ronnie and I are actually a team for that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because we just can't get enough of each other.
Just very briefly, for anyone listening who doesn't know what Horseshoe Hell is, can you give like the tiny little elevator speech about what that comp is?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because Horseshoe Hell helped me lead to my own philosophy of what ACF should feel like. I've always thought it should present like a Kraggen classic, but feel like Horseshoe Hell, because Horseshoe Hell is like this wild rave of a climbing festival where it's full of people who just love rock climbing. It's a competition, right? It's a 24-hour long competition where you do as many pitches as you can in the 24 hours and you don't sleep and you don't rest. It's just, it's absolute chaos. And people are in costume. Sometimes they're even naked the entire time. It's just this wild thing. And my favorite part about it is it's a competition, but so many people there don't look like a climber, and I compete a lot. And so you get used to that look of a climber. And at Horseshoe Hell, it's just people who love climbing. And sometimes people who win categories don't climb anything harder than 5'9" the entire day. And so this year is the first year that we actually have awards for adaptive categories. So there's a lot of smack talk going on right now in the back channels of the paraclimbing world. Yeah, I wanted to co-opt that like psychedelic rave culture in climbing for a little bit for our stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that September?
Yeah, it's like the very end. So pretty much bounce right from there to ACF.
Hell yeah. Cool.
And then after that, yeah, truthfully, I'm not sure. Yeah, I've got a couple bucket list things in the future. You know, I'm at this weird place where I'm probably done competing. You know, next Nationals is our 10th year anniversary of when we did our first national championships in 2014. So I'll definitely be at that. And then after that, just kind of refiguring out what climbing means to me. And, you know, been fairly lucky in being able to accomplish most everything I set after, setting the bar really high, always kind of falling a little bit below where I thought I would be, but still way further than I would have been if I never tried at all. And just kind of figuring out what's next. Am I more stoked on trad climbing now since I've just done nothing but boulder and sport climb my face off? Or I don't know, you know? So just kind of being open to what that looks like and, you know, what my next motivation is. I'm not sure, but whenever it strikes me, I'm going to go 100% in on that, just like I have ever on anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool, you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah. I mean, it was really cool to have a space where we could talk about all this and, you know, share some of our stories from previous years. And I mean, it's the biggest and baddest thing that we're doing right now. So it definitely is a, you'll want to be there. There's a lot of FOMO going on if you don't make it, for sure.
However you get there, you got to be there.
You've been listening to Everybody Climbs. This episode was recorded in 2023, but both festivals Ronnie and Mo mentioned are annual, so don't worry, you haven't missed your chance to get involved. You can find more info about the Adaptive Climbers Festival at adaptiveclimbersfest.org, and you can find an in-depth radio piece that I produced about the event last year on the podcast Inside Appalachia. This episode was produced as a collaboration with Sends and Suffers and Plugtone Audio. Big thanks to Mario for being down to make all of this happen. And thank you all for listening. I'm Emily Chen Newton, an adaptive sports reporter. You can find my other work on NPR, in Climbing Magazine, Gear Junkie, Climbing Business Journal, and others. If you want to reach out about what you heard on today's show or have ideas for future coverage, you can send a message on the contact page of plugtoneaudio.com. That's all for today. Climb on, climb strong, and remember, everybody climbs.